digital credit is not a silver bullet. Complementarities definitely matter, especially given that farmers face multiple constraints simultaneously.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Every year, at the beginning of each planting season, smallholder farmers are likely to be short of cash at just the wrong time. They can borrow, of course, but that's not easy and it's certainly not cheap because, of course, their neighbours are looking for credit too. So if we could find a way to lend to them efficiently and cheaply, there's huge potential. But previous research has shown that this is not a simple problem to solve. Monica Lambon-Quefio of the University of Ghana was part of a team that tested the potential of digital credit for farmers in Ghana. And she joins me now to tell me what happened and what this can tell us. Monica, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Monica, farmers in Ghana, as in many developing countries, they can't easily get formal credit, can they? What are the problems here? Why can't they?
Let me explain this with an illustration of a typical smallholder farmer in Ghana. So let's imagine that at the start of the season, this farmer needs about 500 Ghana cedis, which is equivalent to about $50, right, to purchase inputs now, right? So she needs to purchase fertilizer, hire labor, rent, irrigation services to do all that. And her income only comes in later on in the year. Cash is tight exactly when it is needed. So this farmer goes to the bank. Immediately, the bank sees three issues. The first is the fact that the farmers do not have any verifiable records on incomes, on sales, on production, nothing. There's no audited accounts. There's no credit histories. So this lack of information makes it difficult for the bank to actually determine whether this farmer is credit worthy or not. The second thing is that the bank would require the farmer to actually pledge an asset. And this is what the bank would typically use to claim that asset should we have a situation where the loan goes bad. But again, a smallholder farmer does not have any legally enforceable collateral, right? Oh, yeah. And this is because the farm that she's currently working on probably belongs to her husband or her father's family, some family member or a clan. As an individual farmer, she cannot use the family land to back her loan application. Now, the third point is from the bank's perspective. From the bank, they look at a $50 loan compared to the high transactional costs that they have to incur, the processing fees, the staff time, monitoring these repayments, especially given that these farmers are in remote areas. These are all things that they have to incur cost on. And they look at this and they realize that it's not a profitable venture to pursue. The end result is that the farmer cannot access the loan that she needs to undertake, you know, the investment on her farm.
These are tough problems to solve. So the farmer, what does she do or what does she not do?
Well, there are a few options and strategies that are available to these farmers. So what will she do? Typically, they would rely on their own savings. They belong into savings group. So most of these members in the savings groups would also require loans. Whatever is made available will be small in size, right? And in some cases, they would also liquidate their assets. So we see that happening during the farming season. These farmers would sell off their livestock, for instance, to be able to get the cash that they need to make their investments. Sometimes they would also tend to informal lenders within their communities. And again, as you can imagine, this is usually offered at very high interest rates. We also have situations where farmers will rely on their family and friends. And as you rightly mentioned, everybody else in the community needs that money at that same time. So that is not a reliable option either. What we see happening more frequently now is that farmers tend to sell their projected harvest in advance. So we have traders, we have aggregators from the big cities going into the farming communities to provide the investments that the farmers need. And then what they do is to buy these produce in return. But as you can imagine, again, they would buy these at less competitive rates or prices. So we have a situation where the farmers find themselves in this cycle of low margins. What it means is that they'll reduce the investments that they undertake on the farms, right? We see them spending less on fertilizer. They would reduce fertilizer application. They wouldn't use improved seeds. There would actually be zero mechanizations on their farm. And in some cases, they actually reduce the size of the farm, the acreage that they are working on for that particular season.
So if many farmers are trapped in this situation, which we know that they are, what is the outcome for them? What's the outcome for Ghana's economy?
At the farmer level, usually underinvestments would translate into lower yields and then lower revenues.
Yeah.
Right. So the low productivity because of the underinvestments in the farm means that they're going to record lower farm incomes. And because in most cases, for instance, if they're not able to diversify their crops because they don't have the funds to do that, they are exposed to shocks. So one bad shock, the income volatility becomes high. And what this means is that households are no more resilient, and this has implications for welfare, food security, and then the other effects that, you know, really affects the welfare of the household. At the economy level, at the Ghanaian economy level, underinvestment has very serious implications. Immediately, we see that there will be declines in agricultural productivity growth, and this stagnates rural structural transformation. And this, in most cases, will lead to higher food prices. We have instances where there'll be increased food importation. And if you're dealing with a cash crop like cocoa, in our case, what it means is that export earnings is going to decline. And when export earnings declines, the whole economic growth is actually going to be affected negatively. So overall, underinvestments would have serious implications both at the farmer level and also at the national level.
A lot to gain if you can begin to solve this problem. The intervention that you tried was to partner with Farmerline in Ghana to provide credit to these cocoa farmers. Tell me, what is Farmerline? How does Farmerline work?
So Farmerline is actually a social enterprise.
At Farmerline, we line up a number of strategic efforts that seek to lower farmers' input costs and better position them to make more profit from their yield.
They operate in the agricultural sector across multiple countries on the continent, right? And their main aim is to support small-scale farmers.
Ultimately, we help farmers make significant cost savings on their inputs and provide them with resources that increase their profits.
So they were our implementing partner on this digital credit evaluation in Ghana. And Farmerline actually has a platform called Merge Data. Through this platform, they offer various digital services, including weather information on prices, on markets, providing farming tips to farmers, and then also to provide credits to farmers. On the credit side or on their financing side, they have developed a credit scoring algorithm which is based on non-traditional data, such as using farm characteristics, production, sales histories, to create a score that helps them to determine the credit worthiness of their farmer applicants. So the nice thing about Farmerline is that application process is all digitized. So the farmer applies for the import loan on the application on the app. Is web-based and is also an app. So what this means is that both the farmers and then the Farmerline themselves do not have to travel to these communities. So transactional costs are reduced and farmers actually receive notifications about the status of the application right on their phones. And inputs are delivered at the farm gate or at the centralized point where farmers can easily go and pick up their inputs. So in the whole process, there's very minimal human interaction that is required, which is really good to expand finance access to these farmers. Another really good thing about their product is that Farmerline offers flexible payment terms. So the grace period for their loans is about 3 months, after which they start paying monthly, which is key in this particular case.
So your experiment was on using Farmerline to deliver this digital credit. How did you structure the experiment?
When farmers apply digitally through Farmerline's Merge Data platform, Farmerline runs the algorithm, then they are able to predict the credit worthiness. Then Farmerline passes. So the farmers who actually pass the screening test, in this case, are deemed eligible for our study. We passed on all those pool of eligible applicants to IPA. We partnered with IPA in Ghana. IPA then ran the randomization code. So eligible farmers were now randomized into two groups, treatment and control. In our study, we had over 900 farmers that were assigned to treatment and over 400 that were assigned to the control group. And all these farmers were notified between 2 to 3 days after that process. So farmers in the treatment group actually received the input loans that they applied for. The promise was to deliver this within 30 days. And then farmers in the control group were informed that they will not receive the input loans. However, all farmers, both treatment and control, could continue to use PharmaLine's other services that they offered.
And when the loan is approved from PharmaLine, what are they getting? How much are they getting?
The PharmaLine capped the loan size at 350 Ghana cedis at the time, which was equivalent to $75,
right,
using the time that the loan was disbursed. In our data, what we realized is that the loan sizes were much smaller. So on average, the mean loan size was about 189 Ghana cedis, which is equivalent to about $40. And the median amount that was requested by the farmers was about $45, which is 208 Ghana cedis at the time.
Now, this is a well-known problem, the constraint on farmers, and there have been interventions tried before, and sometimes it's worked fairly well, sometimes it hasn't really worked at all. What's different about this approach that means that you think that it might be successful?
I think three design features actually made this product or this intervention different from what we know to be in the literature. And the first one has to be the digital delivery. As I explained earlier, the entire process was digitized, right? So application is done on the phone, inputs are delivered to farmers with, I should say, minimal human interactions. So this reduces cost both to the lender and to the borrower. And this is key if you compare it to the standard microfinance models that we know to exist. Another key feature that is important or that made the difference is the fact that the loans were given as input loans and not cash, right? So no cash was given directly to farmers. And this is an important feature because it reduces fungibility. It increases the likelihood that the loans actually translate directly into farm investments.
Ah, right.
And then you're sure that you're giving loans to farmers that goes to exactly what they require. And another key feature, the flexibility of the repayment. The payment structure was designed to align with the agricultural cash flows. This reduces the likelihood of loans going into default. Mm-hmm. Once the repayment is aligned to the time that the farmers receive income, then they are more likely to make payments. So these are the key features of the intervention or the product that made the difference for us.
I see. So on the repayment, then the time to start repayment is not when the farmers have just planted their crops.
No.
Because they have no money at that point.
At the point, yeah, they have no money. Money only comes in during the harvest season. So if you structure the repayment in such a way that it aligns with the cash flows, then you're more likely to see them repay their loans.
So, Monica, what happened? Did the outputs, did the farmer profits increase?
We actually found that access to digital credits increased farm input expenditures, right? So we realized that input expenditures increased about 11%. And the interesting thing I should say is that farmers were actually spending more on inputs that they could not get from PharmaLine. They were getting fertilizers and pesticides and other things, but then they were not getting things like irrigation services, you know. So they ended up paying or spending a lot more on these kinds of other inputs that they complement what they were receiving from PharmaLine. We also found that the land that they dedicated to mixed cropping also increased significantly. However, we do not find any significant impact on outcomes like production values or sales or profits.
Oh.
The coefficients were actually small and not statistically significant.
Oh. So, Monica, tell me why this happened. It's disappointing that there wasn't this bigger impact, isn't it? You must have been disappointed. What, when you looked into it, did you discover the problems were?
The research team was quite disappointed that the intervention didn't yield as bigger impacts as we had hoped for. In our paper, we offer the two reasons, two explanations as to why we believe this was the case. And the first is, if you look at the way the intervention was actually designed to relax a very timing-sensitive constraint. In our minds and in the farmer's mind, the plan was very clear. Our theory of change was very clear, right? Mm-hmm. Farmers apply for the loans, they get the inputs on time, they apply them appropriately to protect their crops, they get a good harvest, and then they repay after harvest. If inputs arrive late, say weeks after a critical window, the farmer isn't able to go back in time to recover the missed yield gains.
Absolutely.
Right. So even though the farmer technically received the loan, the expected productivity boost that the input is supposed to provide, it doesn't materialize. Mm-hmm. This was an issue that we discovered or uncovered during our project. We realized that many farmers did not receive the inputs within the intended window. As you can imagine, agriculture can be very unforgiving about timing.
Yes.
So the late fertilizer application, the late spraying can significantly reduce the returns of the investment. So this was the reason that we gave in our paper. And a second reason to also highlight has to do with compliance. We acknowledge in our paper that compliance was not perfect. So some farmers were assigned to treatment, ended up not receiving the input loans. And for those who even received it, as we indicate, they did not receive it on time. And we also had a situation where a smaller share of farmers who were assigned to the control group found ways to, like, you know, receive the input. And obviously, this has important implications because then your treatment and control groups become a bit more similar. So the estimates in terms of the average impacts are actually diluted. So for us, the key lesson here is that the binding constraint wasn't just about access to credit. It was about the timeliness.
Could you establish that this timeliness would have made a difference? Because I can understand when you talk to the farmers about it, they said, oh, you know, stuff came late, and it seems extremely reasonable that that would be the case. But could you independently establish that that would have made a difference?
Yes, we actually did. So for us, yes, in our qualitative interviews and when we interacted with the farmers, the issues about input delays actually came up several times. But obviously, we have to be mm-hmm. able to verify this in our data. And in our analysis, what we do is to carefully explore this heterogeneity relating to the timeliness of the loans. And we did find that those who received timely loans had significantly higher crop sales. When it came to profits, the estimates were a bit imprecise, but we had evidence suggesting that there were higher profits for those who actually received the loans on time. So it wasn't only about what they told us during our interactions with them, but our data also verified this. Our analysis verified this fact.
Was one of the problems that the loan was delivered as inputs? And that can be logistically difficult to do rather than just sending credit to a phone.
Yes, it is actually. There are key trade-offs. If you think of the fact that input loans can improve farm investment, it also comes with its operational risks, right? So in-kind mm-hmm. or input deliveries would require you to run a whole supply chain. So you have to procure good quality inputs. You have to aggregate them, consider the last mile, distribution. These are all additional work streams that are not required if you're going to go for cash loans. Another thing that input loans requires you to do is to really coordinate delivery very carefully. Inputs have to be delivered to farmers in remote areas. And usually that would depend on transportation availability, the conditions of the road, and even coordination among the local agents. And most times these are beyond the control of the implementer, in this case, Farmerline, right? So these are all additional considerations that you have to take into account, which if you're running cash loans, you wouldn't require to do this. And additionally, the timing of the input delivery becomes very critical at this point. So now it becomes a matter of when are the inputs arriving? It's not only about whether they arrive, it's when are they arriving for the farmers mm-hmm. to actually make good use of it.
If we take the optimistic point of view, what can we learn about the potential of digital credit to make a difference to these farmers?
If we design digital credits and implement it well, I think it solves very important constraints. Think of the last mile and transaction costs that are associated mm-hmm. with expanding credits using the standard modules that we know. Offering a loan product digitally reduces lender and borrower transactions. There's less paperwork, there's less travel. And the use of alternative credit scoring data, in this case, actually has the potential to expand access to credit beyond the traditional collateral model that we see. Being able to implement this digital credit well also ensures that credit is actually put to productive use. So you're delivering the loans as input, and so that reduces fungibility. It shifts spending towards farm investments rather than consumption. If it is done well, and again, the repayment is matched to the seasonal cash flows, it actually helps to ensure that the full potential of the farm investments is actually realized.
But for me, the interesting thing about this paper was it really reflects how difficult the real world implementation of this is. And having been through all of this, what do we learn about the other things that need to be done alongside this so that digital credit can make that difference?
Digital credit is not a silver bullet. Complementarities definitely matter, especially given that farmers face multiple constraints simultaneously. So if we are relaxing these constraints, for example, if we are providing extension services, we are training these farmers on how to make good use of the inputs that they've obtained, then we can unlock the positive impacts that we desire. The key here for us as the research team is to be able to deal with these multiple constraints jointly so that we can reap the full benefits of digital credit.
Well, if it's not a silver bullet, it's definitely a huge step forward. Thank you very much for talking about it, Monica.
Welcome, Tim.
The title of the paper is Access to Digital Credit for Smallholder Farmers, Experimental Evidence from Ghana. And the authors, Dean Carlin, Monica Lambonquefio, Utsav Mangia, and Chris Udry. It was published in the Journal of Development Economics number 181. That's April 2026. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. Best way to make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe, follow us. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. Our past episodes, as always, at voxdev.org, where there are articles about the topics that we feature. If you like what you're hearing, please tell someone else about us. Leave us a review as well. Vox Dev Talks is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zargarian. Thanks to Oliver Hanni and Iman Siddiq at Vox Dev.